Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Mario Williams hands him around the waist and he drops him. Super Mario gets in on the sack party.
Yeah! Let's go, Buffalo!
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Ball into the end zone. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Aaron Williams made a leaping interception in the end zone.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. More draft talk today. We're going to talk with Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network 8 days before the start of the NFL draft. A break in draft talk. 8 o'clock, we'll be on the line with Paul Swaney of StadiumJourney.com. What's the best stadium experience in the NFL? And our pal Kevin Weidel joins us at 8:30 with more talk about the NFL draft.
This is pandemonium.
Finds a crease up the middle, dodges the man at the 5, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Counting down the days to the NFL draft. I can't wait now. We're so close. 8 days away, a week from tomorrow, round one of the NFL draft. Good evening. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Coming to you live from One Bills Drive. We're here until 9 o'clock tonight. A good lineup with most of it. Draft talk. That's where we are at these days. And we're opening up the phone lines as we do every night. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. And we'll throw it out on Twitter as well if you want to tweet something to us at John Murphy Show. You know, every night, probably for the last few months and especially in the last few weeks, I would guarantee you every night when we take phone calls, somebody calls to talk about Johnny Manziel. And I get it. I understand it. They're talking about Johnny Manziel as a fit for the Buffalo Bills. I understand it. A flashy player, a dynamic performer. He won a lot of games at Texas A&M. A lot of fun to watch. I get it. But I think my position on this is pretty clear. I don't think he's the right fit for the Bills and may not be the right fit for a lot of NFL teams. Here's what I want to do tonight, and I want all the Manziel supporters or detractors or people who may not have a fully formed opinion. We welcome your calls as well. Tonight's the night to flush out Johnny Manziel. Get it out of your system. Tell me why he should be drafted first overall. Tell me why the Bills should pick him at number 9. Tell me what it is about Johnny Manziel that makes him so special. Coming home last night after our show, I tuned in the Sirius XM NFL radio. My pal Bill Polian, whose opinions I respect a great deal, he was raving about Johnny Manziel, raving about the intangibles and the things he can do. I mean, the Manziel hype has been with us for over a year now, ever since, pre-Heisman Trophy a couple of Decembers ago. It's been with us for a while. It is building now to a crescendo, I believe, in terms of his fitness for the NFL. He's going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You'll get that. If you're a Sports Illustrated subscriber, you'll get that. Their draft preview. Johnny Manziel. Johnny Football. 5 Meditations on Johnny Football by Peter King. And I'm looking at the cover right now. It's up there if you want to find it. I mean, he's the guy that people are going to talk about in this draft in the first round, Johnny Manziel. But some of the quotes on the Sports Illustrated Draft Preview edition. Mike Holmgren, got to respect the way he's been around quarterbacks and the quarterbacks he's drafted and developed in the league. Mike Holmgren's quote, and this is without any other context. Mike Holmgren on Johnny Manziel, quote, too playground, too freelancy. You got to think about that. Doug Flutie, who some compare him to, on Johnny Manziel. His instinctive play is phenomenal. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. Kevin Gilbride, former Giants offensive coordinator, former Bills offensive coordinator, did a great job, I think, in getting Eli Manning up and running in the league. Kevin Gilbride says his lower body mechanics are awful, but wow, he makes some throws. David Cutcliffe, Duke football coach, quarterback developer, had the Manning boys in college, had Thad Lewis at Duke. David Cutcliffe's quote, who gives a rat's ass about his mechanics? I'd love to coach this kid. Some of the quotes on the cover of this week's Sports Illustrated about Johnny Manziel. So we want to open it up to you. What do you think? What is the attraction to Johnny Manziel? Why do the Bills need to consider him? Why does anybody need to consider him with the early picks, the first picks in the draft? Phone lines are open. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. All, respected people. Everybody's writing and thinking about Johnny Manziel these days. And part of it is Manziel and his teammate Mike Evans and offensive tackle Jake Matthews are going to work out for the St. Louis Rams on Friday. Can you believe that? At this late hour, they're going to work out in College Station, Texas, a private workout for the Rams. I mean, is this a smokescreen set up by the Rams? The Rams sitting there with the second overall pick? I mean, to have Manziel conduct a private workout, the others are there too, obviously, Mike Evans and Jake Matthews, but to have Manziel there, either A, the Rams are very interested, or B, the Rams want everybody to think they're very interested and will entertain trade offers. Manziel would be a legitimate number two pick. Matthews would, but neither will be at number 13 when the Rams pick again. So that kind of fuels the fire. The Texans with the first overall pick. You know, are the Texans in position? They need a quarterback. They need a quarterback. But John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, well-respected writer, says as he believes it, the Texans right now are trying to decide between Jadeveon Clowney and Johnny Manziel with the first overall pick. And he writes, John McClain writes, the biggest knock on Manziel is that with his size and style of play, injuries are inevitable. He continues, this is John McClain, everyone I've spoken to in the NFL or those I trust and used to coach or scout in the league has told me they're convinced Manziel will get injured. He is a gamble in many respects, but yet his supporters are still there. People love the guy. Fans love to talk about the guy. Let us know what you think about Johnny Manziel. What is it that makes him your favorite on the draft board for the Bills or anybody else? Phone lines open. 803-0550 is the number to call. Rick Gosselin, who writes for the Dallas Morning News, respected pro football writer, asked about Johnny Manziel. He says, Manziel's biggest hurdle is, I'm going to quote this this recent comment from Rick Gosselin. He's going to have to develop a pocket presence. Manziel is going to have to discover what Vince Young discovered before him. The defensive ends and linebackers are all bigger and faster than he is. He won't be able to run around on Sundays like he did on Saturdays. He continues, like Drew Brees, Manziel is going to have to learn to slide in the pocket, step up, step back, create passing lanes he can see through. He is only 5'11 and three quarters. This is Gosselin continuing. So many of his big plays at A&M came when he's on the move, but he also got beaten up physically in the SEC. And if you get beaten up on the field in college, the punishment will be worse in the NFL, where every defense has 11 All-Americans. These are legitimate concerns, I believe. These are legitimate reservations about Johnny Manziel, making him the number one overall pick, picking him for the Buffalo Bills, where they're already trying to develop a quarterback. And finally, Greg Cosell, and I mentioned this at Yahoo.com. I think I referred people to this article a month or so ago. Greg Cosell, NFL Films senior producer and astute talent evaluator on Johnny Manziel. He talked to teams, he broke down tape, and he wrote this about a month ago on Johnny Manziel. You see, a quarterback who creates his own problems with what appears to be a lack of understanding and discipline, and then once in a while he makes an unbelievable, unstructured play. There's a sense that he makes it up as he goes, a shoot-from-the-hip element that is so much fun and entertaining to watch, but you're not sure that it will work in the NFL. Entertaining is great for fans and highlight shows, but it is not a quarterback attribute. A quarterback cannot live on the edge, play randomly, and be consistently successful against NFL defenses. To me, that's about as definitive of a statement as there is, knock on Johnny Manziel. Not to knock the games that he's won, not to knock the excitement he's produced. My thinking is that the Johnny Manziel supporters out there in our audience and all over, you know, the NFL audience right now, see the highlight plays, see the spectacular plays on ESPN. They don't see the down-in, down-out plays, the plays that he doesn't make. And that's why I don't think he's a fit for the Bills. That's why I don't think he is a legitimate top 10 pick in this draft. And that's why I'm not sure if he's going to succeed in the NFL. As our friend Kevin Weidel, who's on the air with us almost every week now to talk about the draft, says, he is the most polarizing figure he's seen in the draft in years, Johnny Manziel. So tonight, on the phone lines, let's clear the air. Sell me on Johnny Manziel. Tell me what he does, why it would be a good pick for anybody, Bills or anybody else. Please don't call up and say the guy just wins. I know that's, you know, a familiar thing that people say. You got to have more than that. Winning at Texas A&M is not the same as winning for the Houston Texans or the Buffalo Bills or anybody in the NFL, St. Louis or anybody. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Sell me on Johnny Manziel. Let's flush out the Johnny Manziel talk tonight. I guess in the back of my mind, I'm hoping maybe we don't have to talk about it again for the next week. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Tell me about Johnny
Manziel. He's taking over, Murph.
He's taking over everything. Tell me about Johnny Manziel, why he is so important to the Bills or anybody else in the NFL. 803-0550, the number. Let's start tonight with Mark in Tonawanda. Hello, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you, John?
I'm okay.
Why draft Johnny at 1? Why draft Johnny at 9? Why draft him anywhere? Is I think it's because of his appeal and his basically, for lack of a better term, his swagger. He carries himself to a degree that, you know, Matt Barkley last year, Ryan Nassib, didn't. Like, he doesn't have the – those two didn't have the flash. That's why they were drafted in, you know, the second, third, fourth round when they were talked about being drafted top 10. I just think that he's going to – well, whether he's a good quarterback or not, he's going to sell tickets. He's going to sell jerseys. He's going to get Buffalo – I'm not saying we should draft him, although I do love him. He's going to get Buffalo publicity that we wouldn't otherwise have.
And what's the big deal with publicity? Winning gets you publicity. Who cares? Do you really care about publicity? Is that what this is all about, publicity?
I wouldn't say that, but it's one of the things that he's going to bring. And if you go on ESPN and look at Buffalo's publicity right now, what is it? It's that they're a losing franchise who's going to get moved to Los Angeles, even though that's not true. It's just people don't care about Buffalo, so they're just going to, you know. If we got Johnny Manziel, it's just one of those things that's going to make it pop off the newspaper and Buffalo is serious this year.
I don't give a Cutcliffe, David Cutcliffe says, I don't give a rat's ass about publicity. I don't care if ESPN talks about the Buffalo Bills. When the Bills start to win, ESPN will start talking about the Buffalo Bills. Simple as that. And they'll find other heroes, other players to talk about. You really care that much, Mark, if ESPN focuses on the Buffalo Bills? That really matters to you? I guess it does. Are you still there? I guess it does. I can't. That's not a reason to draft anybody. It's certainly not a reason to draft anybody in the first round. It's certainly not a reason to draft anybody with the first overall pick. Publicity? Are you kidding me? Got to do better than that. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Tell me why Johnny Manziel merits consideration as a Bills pick in the top 10. Why he merits consideration as a Houston Texans pick with number 1 overall or St. Louis at number 2. Let's go to Tom in Amherst. Hello, Tom.
Hey, John. I think the guy is incredible. I've been watching him pretty much his whole college career. That Chip Slable in particular, he looks awesome. You know, he threw some really deep, right on the money passes. He's got greatest capability, and I can clearly see why he's going to be a top 5 pick in this draft. And I think the Bills should get him.
When you say Tom, and tell me the truth, you're watching him his whole career. Are you watching whole games? Or are you watching the highlights on ESPN on highlight shows?
A little both. You know, I've watched them mostly in the highlight shows, but I have seen a number of games.
Okay.
And I think he's the real deal.
He can make plays. He will make plays. Will he win consistently in the NFL? I guess that's my question. And the video I've watched, and, you know, we talked with the guys last night from Draft Breakdown, I see the plays occasionally. I also see, you know, the nothing plays, the stuff that he can't do at Texas A&M. And I also see, as been pointed out, the undisciplined play. You know, he doesn't hang in the pocket. You need a pocket passer, I believe, at least an element of a pocket passer, to succeed in the NFL. And he's not there, and I don't know if he can with his stature and with his arm strength. Talking about Johnny Manziel, I want to flush it out of everybody's system tonight, 8 days before the draft. What makes him so special? Why should he be number one? There's plenty of people out there who say he should. I went through some of the people who I trust, whose observations I trust, including my own, who say that he shouldn't be counted on to do a whole lot in the NFL. I know there's production at Texas A&M. There's wins there. I just don't think that he has what it takes to succeed on a consistent level in the National Football League. Here is Greg in his car. Hello, Greg.
Hi. I wanted to make a note of Johnny Manziel did at Texas A&M what we're looking to do in Buffalo. They jumped leagues to the SEC. They have not done all that well. And he provided that spark for them to succeed in a very tough league, one that's considered the best in college football. Part of Buffalo's problem with our quarterback play has been the captain checkdown mentality. The Trent Edwards, even the criticism of E.J. Manuel when he was playing, but these guys won't take a chance. They won't go for those open receivers. And Johnny Manziel is not afraid to win, and he's shown that he can do it moving to the SEC, and that's exactly what Buffalo needs to succeed.
All right, fair point. I would argue, however, that E.J. Manuel did as much, if probably not more, winning than Johnny Manziel did in his collegiate career. 4 bowl game wins for E.J. Manuel. I would agree with you that I've said this on the show, I think, as recently as last week. I'm looking forward to E.J. Manuel's second year and watching him kind of, you know, take the ramps off, take the governor off in every respect on the field with his throws, with his ability to fire it downfield, make quick decisions and get the ball downfield, with his presence in the locker room, with his media availability. I'm ready for E.J. to cut loose this year, and I hope the Bills are too. But, again, I would think E.J. had as much a record of winning in college as Johnny Manziel has. Let's go to Justin in Richmond. Justin, hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Murph?
Okay.
I don't want any part of Johnny Manziel. I think he's overhyped. He's overrated. Honestly, I think the Alabama win pushed him over the top. I love E.J., and I want to say that I think the people that are sold on Johnny Manziel, one, I don't think they understand football to the extent of, you know, a coach or a former player. And two, I think that a lot of them are just watching highlight films and, you know, listening to the blogs and the Todd McShays of the world. But I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say.
All right. Thanks, Justin. We're talking about Johnny Manziel, and tonight's your night to sell me on Johnny Manziel. We're kind of flushing out the Johnny Manziel system tonight. If you've got a thought on why this guy belongs in a Bills uniform, why he belongs as the number one overall pick, now's the time to let us know why. Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach us on Twitter, too, at John Murphy Show. Give us, you know, what you think. Why is he on the cover of Sports Illustrated this week? You know why? Publicity, as the first caller said, because people like to talk about Johnny Manziel. Victor K. tweets in, I'm not impressed with Johnny football, and I don't even know if he's even worth taking the message it would send to E.J. if we took him. Yeah, again, I don't care that much about messages to E.J. Manuel or what the message would be. If I thought they could get better by taking Johnny Manziel, I'd be all right with that if they took him this year. But I'm not convinced they would. I think E.J. Manuel, to my mind, projects as a better NFL quarterback than Johnny Manziel does, and they're about a year apart. You know who? I'm going to make the argument the other way. You know how I feel, and let us know what you think about Johnny Manziel. You know who likes Johnny Manziel in the NFL? John Gruden, Monday Night Football's John Gruden. He did a conference call, and he's had all these guys in there for his quarterback camp series on ESPN, all these quarterback prospects. He's had all these guys in. He's talked to them. He's looked at the video. He is a qualified observer of quarterback play, John Gruden is. And John Gruden, on a conference call yesterday, was asked, does Johnny Manziel need a perfect situation? What would be your main concerns about Johnny Manziel, Coach Gruden?
I don't have any concerns. You know, I'm a Manziel, I don't know what the word I should use, fan or proponent or advocate or whatever I am. I want Manziel. I realize he's under 6 feet tall. Maybe he can't see over the line. I think we blew that theory in the water last year with Wilson and Breeze. Look, he's got a 32 on the Wonderlic. I spent 2 days with him. I know he can learn, and I know he wants to learn. He had 4 different offensive coordinators at Texas A&M. He had 2 different head coaches. It didn't matter. He adapted and did extremely well. This is the first Heisman Trophy winner as a freshman. In 2 years at Texas A&M, he had the most productive back-to-back seasons in SEC history. I don't know what you want him to do. He threw for 8,000. He ran for 2,000. He has 93 touchdowns in 2 seasons. All I know is I want Manziel.
John Gruden, got to listen to that. And very convincing. I'm not convinced. Not for the Bills. Not in the first 10 picks. I know Johnny Man. I don't know. I feel Johnny Manziel will probably go in the first 10 picks, but not for me. You may feel differently. Now's your chance. A few minutes left here in this segment of Open Phones. We've got guests coming up a little bit later on. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free outside Buffalo. You can reach us at 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to Ron in Holly, New York. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hi, John. I think that Manziel should be the number one pick, and I think Bortles should go next, and I think Bridgewater should go next, and that takes up 3 picks, and by the time the Bills get to number 9, they're going to get the player they want.
Okay. Maybe a good offensive lineman.
All right. Thanks, Ron. So as a draft strategy, you think you're hoping anyway Manziel should go number one. A couple of tweets in here. Bills Fanatics, BF tweet in, I truly believe Johnny Manziel is wanted by many Bills fans more for the media attention than actual play. Our first caller kind of sounded like that. Victor K tweeted in, and who cares about publicity? Let Jerry Jones take him. Last I checked, blowing smoke and mirrors doesn't win games. And Ryan McKenna tweeted in, watch the draft breakdown tape, the website we talked about last night. Manziel, exciting and flashy without a doubt, but too inconsistent and not disciplined in the pocket. That's what I see. That's what I think. You may feel differently. Now's your chance. Convince me. Let's go to Kevin in East Amherst. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Yeah, I think Johnny Manziel has the big it factor that Doug Whaley's talked about with E.J. Manuel. And, you know, certainly he has some weaknesses in the pocket, but, you know, E.J. Manuel also, as a young quarterback, has some of those same weaknesses. Certainly there's a physical difference. E.J.'s huge. He's fast. But Johnny Manziel is the most amazing quarterback I've ever seen at the college level. And I've watched a lot of quarterbacks, and I watched those games from start to finish. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. I've been very, very impressed. And in his off-season workouts leading up to this draft have also impressed a lot of pro scouts and professional NFL football players. I think he's got the it factor. I think we're going to regret not taking him if we have a chance. But I understand why the Bills might hesitate, given the fact that they've made this investment in E.J. Manuel.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Ryan in Allegheny. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Love the show. My big viewpoint on it is that I don't see what Johnny has that E.J. doesn't. Arm strength is comparable, but E.J.'s got the leadership off the field, and I don't think Johnny really follows through with that. They're both good football players, but we've already invested in E.J. We have enough needs. Why not use a higher pick to get somebody we need and see play out what we got? I'll take your call there.
All right, thanks. I'm inclined to agree with you, and not just because they've already invested in E.J. I think E.J. has better measurables. Arm strength, arm talent, size, obviously. E.J. Can run the football, I think, more effectively than Johnny Manziel. That's the difference between them. Larry in Rochester. Hi, Larry. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, John. This is a great show. Basically, my viewpoint is a couple years ago, there was a kid out of Florida named Tim Tebow who had two national championships and a Heisman Trophy, and I don't think he made it in the NFL. He had an arm. He could run.
One of the greatest college players of all time, Tim Tebow.
Absolutely. So he played in the best conference in the world. So if you have a guy who can perform in college at that level, but you can't because he doesn't have the accuracy in the pros, and I'm sorry, people get after you on defense in the pros. So you can't just sit back in the pocket and hope you're going to get 5 seconds to throw to a 6'5 receiver. I just don't see Johnny being able to duplicate what he can do in college in the pros.
Good point, Larry. Thanks. Let's go to Mike in Toronto. Mike, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Mike in Toronto. Thanks for taking the call. Thinking that EJ seemed to develop really well over the course of the year, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do this year, owning the reins of the team. I get the sense that the Bills need a little more support on the offensive line. Why not look, and I'm not sure what the draft is looking like, why not look to take a high pick for somebody on the O-line to give EJ a little more time? I'll end there and listen.
All right. Thanks, Mike. To me, that's a play to make. Ebron could be a play to make, a receiver. Mike Evans, if he's there, is a play to make. To do exactly what you said, Mike, to help E.J. out, to be better around E.J. Manuel. I think, in my mind, E.J. Manuel projects to have a better success in the NFL than Johnny Manziel. I really think so, mostly because of measurables. I know that E.J. has a great approach to the game and is going to work at it. That's just my take. We have some tweets about this, and people disagree. I understand that. Bills fans speak up, tweet in, the jersey I'm wearing is A.J. McCarron. Okay. Mark Hallman tweets in, he wins the Heisman first year, then has a better year after. You don't win the Heisman on luck plays. He has skill. Jason Wheelock tweets in, not impressed with him. I think Mike Evans made him. Dave Sappel tweets in, hell yeah, he's a fit. Joe Carey tweets in, Johnny Manziel is the Tim Tebow of the 2014 draft. Tim Atkins tweets in, the staff said EJ is our guy, so build around him. If he doesn't work out, we have the structure in place for the next guy. All right, and finally, Bob Maluga Luga tweets in, Tim Tebow was a much better college quarterback than Johnny Manziel. two national championships without two top five offensive tackles and a top five wide receiver. Good point there. Again, I understand he's exciting. He is. I understand he has won at Texas A&M. He has. But if you're talking about the ninth overall pick for the Bills or the first pick in the draft for Houston or anywhere in between, I think it's a risky pick because of he does not have some of the tangible things that you want to see, a size, a pocket presence, and discipline in playing the position. I know people are going to disagree, and we'll get more time for this, talk about this as the evening goes along. Johnny Manziel, what's the attraction? You can let us know. Give us a call as we continue on in the show. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to be on the line with one of the foremost draft observers in the NFL, and he's always on the air on the NFL Network these days, part of their path to the draft coverage, Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst. He's coming up next on the show. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Oh, we're getting close now, just 8 days away until the NFL draft. We're all over it. The guys at the NFL Network are all over it. Daniel Jeremiah is all over the NFL draft. He's an NFL Network analyst. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at Move the Sticks, and he is on the line with us right now. Daniel, we watch you Monday through Friday, 7 o'clock on NFL Network's Path to the Draft. I got to say, you're always on the network. You're the hardest working man in show business right now, Daniel.
Well, that's nice of you. It's a lot of work. I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to this draft finally getting here, and we're getting close, almost just a week away here.
Yeah, you know, we were saying on the radio show last night, it's been such a long process that's dragged out a couple of extra weeks, and yet now, with the light at the end of the tunnel, I'm getting really excited about what's to come in 8 days.
Yeah, no, it's finally like you get excited about it. It felt like you had to just kind of temper things down a little bit because it seems so far off in the distance, and now we can finally start to see a little bit of that light at the end of the tunnel here. Yeah.
Hey, Daniel, on a piece that you did on the network and on NFL.com recently, you addressed the Bills' draft needs, and you focused in on Eric Ebron in North Carolina. Tell us why you think he's a good fit for Buffalo.
Well, I think, look, anytime you have a young quarterback, I think it's all about trying to get them easy completions, and the best way to do that is with the difference maker of the tight end position. You're in between the hashes. Those are easier throws. You got guys that can separate and get some space. I think it's the quarterback's best friend. So you invest that first-round pick in E.J. Manuel, I think the draft ought to be about, you know, helping him out. And I think the best way you could do that would be with a guy like Eric Ebron. I think he's clearly the top tight end in this draft class, somebody that not only, you know, can go up and get the football, but he's excellent after the catch, a whole new element that not many guys in this draft class bring.
It's unlikely anybody would draft Eric Ebron and expect him to be a good blocker, but I hear different things. One draft expert says he can't block at all. A Bill scout just told me earlier today that he won't hurt you as far as the run game and being a blocker. What do you think?
No, he's not. I mean, he's just going to wall you off and shield you. That's what 99% of the tight ends do. I mean, the teams I worked with, when we're in draft meetings every single year, all right, let's talk. We haven't have any blocking tight ends. Let's, you know, who's the best blocker in this bunch? And that was about a minute and a half discussion, and then we moved on because there just aren't any.
Does a tight end, and does he in particular, merit the ninth overall selection? Would that make sense value-wise?
I think so. I think I have him maybe the 13th or 14th overall player in this draft, but clearly is a top player at that position. So if you have a need, maybe it's a little bit of a reach, but I think you've got a guy that's a difference maker, and I could justify that. I don't think that's too early for him.
We're on the line with Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Move the Sticks. Daniel, will any of the three top offensive tackles be available for the Bills when they're sitting there at number nine?
The thing with offensive tackles, they get pushed up the board every year. I mean, last year we saw it. Well, we have three of the top four picks were tackles. So to me, I always, when I'm trying to project what's going to happen with those guys, I slide them up. No matter where you have them graded, I think they go a little bit higher. So I would say maybe less than 50% chance that they see that third tackle there at number nine.
What about the fourth tackle? Is it, in fact, Zach Martin from Notre Dame?
Yeah, I think so. To me, it is. I mean, there's a little bit of a gap between Taylor Lewan and Zach Martin. Some people on their boards have Zach Martin sliding inside and playing guard, which I think you can do with ease. I think he'd be a dominant guard. But I think he's capable of playing tackle. And he's got 52 starts at Notre Dame. You shouldn't have any questions about him. You've seen him do everything you need to see. I think he's one of the more consistent players in this draft. I think he's a guy going to come in and start right away. And I think you have a solid player at tackle. I don't know if you're going to have a Pro Bowler, But you have a guy you won't have to replace for you know, 8 to 10 years.
From a Bills perspective, with the 9th overall pick, that would probably be too early to take a Zach Martin, I would think, huh?
Yeah, that's a little bit early for me, just with all the other players you have available at that point. To me, you know, I could see Zach Martin maybe going as early as 12 to the New York Giants, but even that might be pushing him up the board a little bit. If you really want to do that, I'd just get out of there. Trade back and try to secure him a little bit later down the line.
Daniel, how many of the quarterbacks, if any, do you think will go in the 8 picks before Buffalo picks at number 9?
I would say maybe one. If I was going to try and handicap it here, I would say that the most likely scenario is one is gone. The next most likely scenario would be zero, and then the next one would be two. So I think we're more likely to have no quarterbacks go than to have two of them go before they pick.
Who do you think that first quarterback off the board will be?
No, I think it'll be Manziel. I do. I think that there's been a lot of time for people to talk themselves into him, and there's some very intriguing aspects to his play, and I think that there's a real chance we're going to see a team buy in on it, and he'll be the first quarterback off the board.
Is Cleveland the likeliest candidate for Johnny Manziel?
I think Cleveland and Minnesota.
Okay.
Those are the two that I would keep an eye on. I think those teams need quarterbacks. Those are both teams with defensive-minded head coaches that appreciate how difficult it would be to defend somebody like Johnny Manziel. I think that's probably the most likely landing spots for him, those two teams.
We're on the line with Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network. NFL Network with live coverage of the draft coming up next week, May 8th through May 10th. Hey, Daniel, how far, if the Bills are going to make a move up in the draft, how far up would they have to go to get, say, Sammy Watkins, would you think?
Sammy Watkins, I think there's a real chance he's, you know, I think he's going to go pick 3 or 4. I think he's going to go to Jacksonville at 3 or go to Cleveland at 4. So if you want to get him, I think that's how far up you have to go. I don't see him getting out of that, you know, past Cleveland with that 4th overall pick.
How is he the type of elite player that would warrant a big – I mean, you're talking – if the Bills are going to move up from 9 to 3 or 4, they're going to have to probably give up another first-rounder in addition to swapping this year and maybe even more than that. Does he warrant that kind of investment?
I love Sammy Watkins. He's my second player, a second highest-graded player I have in the entire draft, but he's not worth that. He's not worth giving up what you would, because you look at the opportunity you would have there at pick number 9, the receiver that you could get there plus the first-round pick next year that you'd have to part with. I'd rather have that package than to go up and get Sammy Watkins. Love him. He's a great player, but there's a lot of depth at that spot in this draft.
So who would be a receiver pick that would make sense at number 9, would you think?
Well, I think Mike Evans is probably going to go to Tampa as it looks right now. That makes a lot of sense with their need at the position. So if he's off the board, it's a little bit early for Odell Beckham, but I don't think it's I wouldn't hate that pick. Another situation, though, where if they wanted to slide back, if somebody wanted to come up for somebody else, maybe they want to come up for an Eric Ebron or a corner, you could slide back a little bit. Odell Beckham would be the next receiver in line for me.
If the Bills like Mike Evans and the Bucks like and maybe need Mike Evans, there's no way that – I mean, that's the pick you got to get ahead of if you're the Buffalo Bills, if you truly believe that Mike Evans is worth that kind of a move, right?
Yeah, and we've talked about the Falcons as a team that's going to move more than likely in this draft, either up or down. They're at number 6. They could move up for Khalil Mack, maybe Jadeveon Clowney, which I don't think they would. That would be too costly. But you could maybe, if you're Atlanta, move up from 6 to 4 for Mack. But if they're unable to get that done, I think they're a team picking right before Tampa, knowing Mike Evans as a possible landing spot. Atlanta, I think they'd be open to sliding back a few spots, and that could be a trade that would work out for Buffalo.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. What about the reports that the Bills are talking about moving up? Do you think, given the fact that this draft is very deep, does it make sense to move up? Would it make more sense to move down, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when you're talking about those first 4 players, I think there's 4 elite players in this draft. And I just gave you the case for one of them. You know, Sammy Watkins is an elite player, but I think because of the depth of the position, you don't move up for him. The other 3, you talk about Greg Robinson, who I think is far and away the best tackle in this draft, and 2 pass rushers, Mack and Clowney. So if you're not going to go up there and get one of those pass rushers, I don't know that it's the wise move to part with precious picks in this draft. I think I'd rather stay where I am or maybe even slide down.
I worry about the Bills having only 6 picks going in. That's not a lot of capital, not a lot of currency to work with if you want to move around, is it?
Yeah, no question. Yeah, there's a lot of teams. You look at the 49ers and a couple others have 11, 12 picks. I think Jacksonville has 11 picks as well. So those teams, the teams got a little more ammunition to move around. If I'm Buffalo in a draft that's very deep at a couple key positions, yeah, I want more picks, not less.
Daniel, tell me about the Jadeveon Clowney. Is he, in fact, a generational type player, a kind of a difference maker that, you know, maybe even talk about a Hall of Fame in his future sometime?
Well, I don't want to put all that on a guy who hasn't taken a snap yet, but when you talk about just talent, raw talent, Clowney's he's the most talented defensive player that I've evaluated in 10 years. So
wow.
That's what I, you know, say about him. He's got the rare size, length, explosiveness to be a dominant NFL player. And, you know, we talk a lot about, well, is he going to ever reach 100% of his potential and work ethic, this, that, or the other. I firmly believe if he reaches 70% of his potential, he's going to be a guy that's going to take some trips to Hawaii. He's a really gifted player.
Daniel, I read a couple of your tweets today. You tweeted out that you had a look at John Urschel. He's a local kid here, a Buffalo kid playing at Penn State. What do you project for him? What do you think of him?
Yeah, John Urschel, to me, I look at him more as kind of that fifth round area. It's a very good, deep group of guards. I slide him down a little bit, but somebody that's tough and physical, plays the way you want a guard to play, just on the ground a little bit too much. I like to see him be a little bit better athlete, a little more under control at times. But I love the temperament and I love the awareness he plays with. I think he's got a chance to be a starter in the league.
You tweeted out this afternoon that you liked the running backs. You said there's some good mid-round value in the running back group. Who do you have in mind there?
Yeah, the running back group I like a lot, and you know, it depends on what you want, big guys or little guys, and I think we talk about all these guys getting pushed down the board. I have that collection of three big guys when you're looking at, you know, Jeremy Hill and Carlos Hyde and then Terrence West from Townsend. Those three guys are intriguing, but then when you get to those middle rounds, you get some of those smaller guys. You get a Lake Seastrunk out of Baylor, who's stiff, but he is very explosive. He can hit a home run. You got Charles Sims out of West Virginia, the Houston transfer, who can catch the ball out of the backfield and do some things in the passing game. And Devontae Freeman's a guy I really like from Florida State. Undersized, kind of a poor man's Darren Sproles, though, and the fact that he can help you in the passing game, and he's just really, really quick and runs bigger than his size inside. So there's a lot of intriguing running backs in this draft. The position's been devalued, which to me means you're going to get real value with these guys in the middle rounds.
Deepest position in the draft, Daniel, what do you think it is?
Wide receiver, and it's not close.
Really?
I mean, wide receiver by far. Yeah, wide receiver. After that, I would say corner's pretty deep. And then there's pretty good depth at tackle. I think those are probably the top three positions. Out edge rusher, not very deep. Inside linebacker, not very deep. But those other three, pretty strong.
Daniel, thanks for this. We appreciate it. Great work on the network. We'll be watching because we know you're there. You're there 24/7, apparently, on NFL Network.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this, Jeff, getting over, take a little break.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Thanks, Daniel.
All right, take care.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Move the Sticks. And he's on the network, the NFL Network, Monday through Friday, 7 o'clock on the NFL Network's Path to the Draft Show. I mean, he's on 24/7. He's always there. All right, a lot to talk about there. Some good insight from Daniel Jeremiah. We'll be back to talk about some of it. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Daniel Jeremiah, he is all over the NFL Network, if you have it. He's always on, and he does great work. He and Charles Davis back and forth, really good stuff. Our thanks to Daniel Jeremiah talking about the NFL draft. Let's hear from you. We got talking about Johnny Manziel a little bit earlier in the show. Sell me on him. Tell me why the Bills or anybody else should be interested in him with a premium first-round draft pick in 8 days. Jay in Buffalo, thanks for waiting. Jay, you're on the air.
Thanks a lot, John. I want to tell you thanks for taking my call, and I want to start this by asking you a question. What do you think of RG3 as an NFL quarterback?
I think he's very talented, and I worry about his durability because of the way he plays.
Well, I kind of feel the same way about Johnny Manziel. I think that both of them are shiny little toys that have great arms and great legs and get away from people and make people go, wow. But until either one of them understands what a pocket is, they will never be an effective NFL quarterback.
Yeah, good point. I mean, there's talent there, and I'm not saying Manziel doesn't have talent. He does. I'm just saying I'm not ready to bet the future of my franchise on Johnny Manziel. I'm much more comfortable betting the future of my franchise on, say, E.J. Manuel, because he's got the tangible, measurable qualities that predict success in the NFL. Manziel does not have those. He's got intangibles. He's got the it factor that people fall in love with, but I'm not willing to bet the future of my franchise on the it factor. Giovanni in Rochester, welcome. You're on the air.
Murph, love your show.
Thanks.
Hey, listen, this is the kind of thing sometimes that drives me crazy about people in Buffalo.
you know, here, the, you know, you have to, you know, when you're creating a team and you're building up your draft, you know, building up your team through the draft and you're assessing your team, you know, you got to reflect for a minute. I mean, to me, Manziel is a boom or a bust type quarterback. Either he's going to be really, really good or he's going to flat out be out of a job in a couple years. And my personal opinion is I think, given what we know about E.J. Manuel over the past year, and people have to remember, here's a guy that came into the season that, A, didn't get a whole lot of practice because he was injured, okay, in camp. So he didn't get the full camp that a rookie quarterback should get, okay, with huge reps during the preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then he comes into the season, and he does pretty well, respectively, for the first few games. Then he gets injured again, right, sits out a few more games, and then comes back again, gets re-injured, and then sits out again. I mean, when you look at his overall, when you reflect on the amount of snaps that the guy took and what he's done, and I'll be honest with you, the Atlanta, there's a few games that Buffalo probably should have won behind E.J. Manuel, but, you know, key drops by Chandler.
Yeah.
You know, in the
Atlanta, so me, sure. Yeah.
When you really look at it, I mean, I've got evidence on E.J. Manuel. He's shown enough to me as a Buffalo fan. Let me tell you something. I'm 40 years old. I was 18 and 19 years old when Bills were in the 90s during their, you know, their glory years. And I wanted as bad as anybody else. But you cannot sit there and tell me that you would take a Johnny Manziel, okay, over an E.J. Manuel right now when you've already seen what E.J. Manuel offers. And like you said, his measurables are built for Buffalo. The big hands for the cold weather and the swirling winds, okay, the big body type. To me, he's a great fit. I think, like you said, we got to go in the draft and either we get one of those three tackles or we go to the tight end. I mean, that's the no-brainer for me. We got to give him that support there.
All right. Thanks very much, Giovanni. Thanks for your call. We're up against the break here, but you make perfect sense to me. Everybody doesn't agree with you or me. A lot of people like the flash, the it factor, the publicity that Johnny Manziel would bring. Well, we'll see. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about stadiums around the NFL. We'll get back to more Manziel talk. Tonight's the night we are flushing the pipes of Johnny Manziel talk. Not to say we won't do it again in the next 8 days, but convince me, because we get calls about him every night. I figured, let's just do it all tonight. Sell me on Johnny Manziel. Got more to come. One more hour to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like this kind of party, baby.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
Hey, hold hands. Let's go check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, we'll get back into Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, as this hour goes along. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Kevin Weidel from ESPN.com about some of the maybe under-the-radar prospects in this year's draft, and he's got a list of some of his tone setters for defense in this year's draft. Kevin Weidel at the bottom of the hour. Breaking away from the draft momentarily, though, this article came across our desk, the ranking of the NFL stadium experiences. And Lucas Oil Stadium, home of the Indianapolis Colts, the number one stadium experience in the NFL. That's according to StadiumJourney.com, a website that deals with stadium experiences for all sports. On the line with us live, the co-founder of StadiumJourney.com, Paul Swaney. Paul, thanks for coming on the air with us tonight. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thanks for having me on.
We really appreciate it. Tell me about StadiumJourney.com. What's the website all about?
Well, our goal is to go out to different stadiums and do a review of the experience with the goal in mind of trying to make recommendations and provide information to fans so that when they go out to a game, they can make the most out of their experience.
And these are fans who, I mean, there are people who just do stadium tours around the country. You know, guys try to go to every baseball stadium, every football stadium. Is it geared towards them or is it geared towards just everyday fans who are, you know, making their way around a couple of different venues?
Well, I think both. I hope that it appeals to those sort of travel junkies that get out there and go see the entire country. But, you know, I also hope that it is helpful for someone who only goes one or two games the whole year. In fact, those people, you know, they really want to make the most of their sporting dollars. So I hope that we can help provide some information and make sure that they have as good a time as possible.
Paul, not just on the football side or the NFL side, but what can folks find on stadiumjourney.com? What sort of information is there for them?
Well, just about every sport you can think of. We cover minor leagues and college, pro sports, lacrosse, tennis, rugby. We've got about 1,825 different venues in 40 countries around the world at this point.
And who does the ratings? Who goes to each of these stadiums to provide the content for the website?
We've got a network of writers, about 100 writers around the world, who sort of focus on their particular region, and they'll go to every ballpark, stadium, arena within a couple hundred miles of where they live. And so that's how we cover most of our reviews.
I don't know how you probably do have a measure of the traffic on the website, but what sort of feedback do you get, and how interested are people in these stadium reviews that you put up?
I think very interested. I think sports fans, first and foremost, are passionate people. And next to me rating your own house, I think your favorite team's stadium is probably the second most important building in your life. So people take it very personally. They get really excited when we say good things. I occasionally get hate mail when we say bad things. And I think that's just a sign of how passionate sports fans are about their home buildings.
Fans grow attached to these places, don't they?
Absolutely.
Especially
a season ticket holder who's spending, 81 games there for a baseball season or eight for NFL.
We had a guest on, a couple of months ago, Paul, who put together a kind of a coffee table book with pictures of every stadium in the NFL and college football stadiums included. And we got talking about the fact that for, decades now, there's been sort of a romanticism about baseball stadiums and fields of green and, the baseball stadium experience. It seems to me only recently have people begun to look at football stadiums in almost the same light. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think you're right. The nice thing about baseball is the playing surface can be different. And so it allows opportunities to do things structurally that you can't necessarily for football. But at the same time, I think more and more NFL teams realize that the stadium experience, the beauty of the building, all of the different extras that go into a game day presentation are important. And I think a lot more emphasis has been placed there, especially given the rise of, DirecTV and the NFL Sunday Ticket, things like that, that encourage people to stay home. I think NFL teams have been forced to really push the experience and make sure that it is appealing for fans to come out to a game.
That's a really good point. It's a really big problem and concern, I think, for the league, all of the league's teams. We're on the line with Paul Swaney. He's co-founder of the website stadiumjourney.com, and they have ranked the NFL stadium experiences. You developed a metric for rating the stadium experience. Paul, tell us about that.
Yeah, we look at every stadium, seven different categories. We look at the food and beverage that's served inside the stadium, the overall atmosphere of the stadium experience, which would also include, and this is especially important for Buffalo, the tailgating experience, the overall neighborhood where the stadium is located, the fans themselves, a category for access, which includes things like parking, traffic, the restroom availability, ability to move around a stadium. Next is the return on investment. Is it worth the price that you pay to go to a game? And then we have one last category that we call extras. That's just for anything else that's kind of special about a venue that doesn't neatly fit into one of those categories.
And all those categories are equally weighted? Is one more important than the other?
When we do these ranking lists, like the NFL Stadium Experience list, we rank we average them all out equally, mostly because I think, everyone has sort of a different perspective. One person might really care about the food in the stadium. Someone else may never eat the food in the stadium. So rather than try to decipher what is most important to everyone, we do it sort of an equal average across the board.
Okay, so ranking the NFL stadium experiences, Paul Swaney's website did that, stadiumjourney.com. What's the number one, what was last year the number one stadium experience in the National Football League?
So we had Lucas Oil Stadium, home of the Indianapolis Colts, is number one. It was close, though. We had them actually tied with Heinz Field. We use as a tiebreaker the ratings of our members. We call that a crowd score on the website. So in this case, Heinz Field and Lucas Oil were tied for best venue in the NFL.
What? And I've been to Lucas Oil Stadium for games and actually for the combine for several years. But in the view of your rankings, what makes Lucas Oil Stadium number one?
Well, they've got a great downtown location. But I think the thing that the Colts do better than any NFL team is they train their staff, and their staff are as knowledgeable and friendly as any staff, not only in the NFL, but I would say in all of sports that I've experienced. And so I think that's a real key, and that sort of is a sort of the ground floor for a good stadium experience.
I agree with you. Actually, I do agree with that. But let me raise this minor quibble, and I like the stadium. I mean, I've worked there a lot, and I love downtown Indianapolis, but even at Lucas Oil Stadium and even in its predecessor, RCA Dome, Hoosier Dome, it seems to me the Indy fans are a little bit docile. It's kind of quiet in there. And then with the dome closed, they can make a lot more noise than they do. What do you think?
Yes and no. I think the positive side or the positive way to look at that is they tend to be more friendly to visiting fans than some other venues.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
I see that as a plus.
You think that's a plus? Okay.
They also, and I don't have a way to measure this, and I'm not sure if anyone has, but it seems to me like the Colts have more jerseys per capita in their fans than anyone else in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I swear everyone in there is wearing a blue jersey when I go there.
What's number two on the best stadium experiences in the NFL?
So we had Heinz Field at number two, and again, we had it tied by our official ranking, so really our members decided the Colts over the Steelers. Heinz Field, I think the thing that they do really, really well is they really show off the history of that franchise. And, of course, they've got a lot of history to brag about. But I think one of the things that they do best is really show everyone those, the Super Bowl trophies are on display. They're easy to see. And it's real easy to sort of suck in that history when you go into Heinz Field.
Paul, where does Ralph Wilson Stadium, right across the parking lot here in Orchard Park, where does that rank on the best stadium experiences in the league?
So we've got Ralph Wilson at number 21.
Wow.
Past year.
Okay, tell me why. What's your review of Ralph Wilson Stadium?
Well, the biggest negative for Ralph Wilson Stadium, it's an old stadium. It could use some upgrades, but I think the neighborhood certainly hurts the overall stadium score when we look at Ralph Wilson Stadium.
What do you mean by that?
Well, just that there's less to do than, let's say, a downtown venue. Mm-hmm. There's less for a fan who might be there for more than just the game.
I got that. I know you're aware of this because I read it on the website. The stadium itself, now 41 years old, is in the midst of a major renovation project. I just came across, they sent out an internal email. There's more than 600 construction workers here on a daily basis, fully involved in the renovation project. It's going to be kind of a new-look stadium starting this September. You're aware of that. I know I read it on the website, right, Paul?
Yeah, we're excited about that. And one thing that we've pledged to do for all four of the major sports is we're going to revisit every single year. So we will have a new review of Ralph Wilson once the renovations are complete.
One of the things that your ratings on Ralph Wilson Stadium that got pretty high marks was the tailgate experience, the atmosphere here in Orchard Park.
Yeah, so you can look at it as a plus or minus, I guess, depending on how you like to enjoy a game. On the one hand, there's not that downtown location. On the other hand, there's, I think, like 15,000 parking spots around the stadium, so there's plenty of room for tailgating, and God knows they've got some of the best tailgating around when you go up to Buffalo.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a real plus, and I think it helps set the tone for the day overall.
Yeah. Paul, what's at the bottom of the list? What's number 32 on the list of the best stadium experiences in the NFL?
Well, we had at the very bottom was FedEx Field, home of the Redskins.
Thank you. I agree. It's brutal there.
It's just so dull. And, we talked about Pittsburgh and how they really show off their history. The Redskins are another team with a ton of history, and it just doesn't shine through when you go to a Redskins game. There's just something flat about that experience.
And this is a personal pet peeve of mine. The radio booths for us to work, to call play-by-play, where they are at FedEx Field? They're in the corner, way down in the corner. I can't see the other end of the field. It's brutal.
Yeah, I'd love to do – I get requests from people saying we should do reviews based on the press box or the food that they serve the press. But I guess that's another list for another time.
I know on your website you have reviewers, right? I guess members of StadiumJourney.com, kind of. What's that all about, Paul?
Well, for the reviewers, I spend quite a bit of time trying to recruit people that go on the sorts of trips that you're talking about, that go on trips to see every single stadium. And in fact, one of our writers last year went on a road trip where he was on the road for 119 days and saw a game at every single NFL stadium. So I really do try to develop a level of expertise with our group of writers, and I think that's a real strength. But even so, most of our writers are going to one or two games at a venue before they do a review. So I really encourage people to get on the site and share their own experiences, you know, especially a season ticket holder who is just going to have perspectives that we'll never have in one or two visits.
I'm sure you probably, this is probably the reason for the website. It strikes me that as much as people like to talk about sports and their favorite teams, much of what we talk about is what it looked like, how it felt, what the stadium was like, how our seats were. That's a big part of people's experience in following sports, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, the memories you have are so much more than the visual part. It's, you know, how cold was it that day you went in December? Or what did you eat that was delicious that you still remember 20 years later? You know, just the smells of the stadium or the tailgating. I think all those senses go into the memories that you develop, and you carry those with you forever.
I agree. It's a great website, Paul. We thank you very much for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it.
Thanks, John. I appreciate you having me on.
Paul Swaney, co-founder of the website StadiumJourney.com. StadiumJourney.com. They ranked the NFL stadium experiences recently. As you heard him say, Indianapolis Lucas Oil Stadium number one. Dead last is FedEx Field outside Washington. The Buffalo Bills in the bottom third, essentially, with the 21st-ranked stadium. And I'd be curious to see, after the stadium renovations going on right now, I would think the Bills stadium would get a boost up in the rankings. They're dealing with concession stands, access issues, moving around the stadium, a sense of history, access to the Bills team store. I would think that the Bills experience will move up when it when the renovations are complete. 600 construction workers almost every day here now at One Bills Drive. Pretty amazing. All right, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, Kevin Weidel from ESPN talks about the draft a little bit. We've been talking about the draft a lot. We've been talking about Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, they call him. And what's the attraction? What's the big deal? He's on the cover of Sports Illustrated coming out this week. Johnny Manziel, 5 meditations on Johnny Football with Mike Holmgren's quote on the cover. Two playground, two freelancing. Doug Flutie's quote, his instinctive play is phenomenal. People are all over the board on Johnny Manziel. We want to hear from you. What do you think about Manziel? Why so much buzz about Johnny Manziel? And sell me on him. What makes him a bona fide top 10 pick in the draft, a possible candidate for the Bills if they choose to do so at number 9, or a possible candidate for the Houston Texans at number 1? Let's take a few phone calls. Mark in New Jersey. Mark, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thanks, John. It's funny when these NFL guys get on there and they talk about all these quarterback-needy teams passing on quarterbacks. I mean, you remember last year how agonizing it was waiting for the Bills to pick a quarterback. We all knew who they were going to pick a quarterback. We just didn't know which one. So if you hitch your wagon to Fitzpatrick and Houston, Henny in Jacksonville, and Hoyer
in Cleveland,
these coaches, these GMs will be fired in 2 or 3 years. They almost have to take one. And if they wait into the second round, the guy that they supposedly want will not be there, because you can do so much more business in the bottom half of the first round than you can in the top of the first, because everybody wants a next year's first to move up. It's unbelievable. As far as Manziel goes, he's just a hype train. He's a guy who's going to come in, get some buzz, and that's what the people in the media want, particularly on that radio station. They want to cover him. They want the buzz. They want the glitz. Has nothing to do with making the Bills a better football team. I've even had some Bills fans say, oh, he'd be fun to use in Madden. That's why I want them to draft him.
Oh, boy. Hey, Mark, you make some good points, especially all good points, but especially about, I guess, reaching for a quarterback. As you said, no one wants to sit there. Houston doesn't want to sit there and have to go with Case Keenum or Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's hard to generate excitement about that. Cleveland, I'm sure, does want to at least an option instead of Hoyer at quarterback. You make a good point. And the Bills, quite frankly, were in that position a year ago, right? They were in that position. They needed to draft a quarterback. They needed to identify and find the quarterback. And they did an exhaustive study last year. Did they get it right? Jury's still out. I think there's a lot of good things about the E.J. Manuel, but certainly the jury's still out on E.J. Manuel. And this year, the story of this season for the Bills is all tied up in what E.J. Manuel is going to be in his NFL career. There's no question about that. But, teams will reach. teams knowing they need a quarterback? I mean, I'm sure those quarterback-needy teams that you mentioned, there's several of them, and some who are probably on the fringe of considering themselves quarterback-needy, they're doing, you know, agonizing work in these final 8 days trying to make sure they have, you know, they identified the right guy. And many of them, some of them are going to land on Johnny Manziel. Let's go to Ben in Dallas. Hi, Ben, you're on the air.
John, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, so first of all, your guess is dead wrong. Ralph Wilson is the number one experience in the NFL as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Okay, but no, I don't want to trade up in the draft for Jadeveon Clowney or a wide receiver. I think we need to stay where we're at, see if maybe Eric Ebron or Mike Evans, you know, falls to number nine. If it doesn't, well, you know, there's other good tackles. The only person I might move down for is a Greg Robinson, but I just don't understand the thinking of even drafting John Manziel. Like, why? I don't understand that.
Well, I don't either, Ben. And, yeah, move up, move down. I don't know about that. The cost to move up, way up, is going to be very, very prohibitive, I think. The cost to move up into those top three, if you got your eye on Watkins, it's going to cost a lot to do that. If you're talking about moving up from 9 to 6, maybe that's something they can swing, and maybe that's the way to go. As Daniel Jeremiah talked about during the first hour, you know, to get ahead of Tampa Bay and maybe get Mike Evans if that's still out there for you. He's considered, you know, one of the top two receivers in the draft. So that's what we're talking about, really. That's what we're talking about as far as moves up, moving down in the draft. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to get more draft talk on, and we hope to get a few more phone calls on. But we're going to take a break now, and when we return, we're going to be with Kevin Weidel, ESPN draft analyst, follows this stuff very closely. He's got some ideas on down-the-line picks at various positions, including quarterback. If you're interested in a quarterback, 5th, 6th, maybe 7th round. He's got some ideas on mid-round running backs, and the Bills have certainly had more than their share of running backs make visits here at Orchard Park over the last couple of weeks. And he's got some thoughts on tone setters for the defense, guys who set the tone, make a difference on their defensive football teams who are available in this year's draft. Kevin Weidel, our go-to guy in the NFL draft, he's coming up next. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio. And as we said, a college football and NFL draft analyst for ESPN, Kevin Weidel on the line with us. Kevin, thank you very much for making yourself available to us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, Murph. Always glad to jump on and join you guys.
Well, we're coming down the home stretch here, and I can tell in your writing on ESPN.com, you're thinking that way too. You posted a story today about the top tone setters on defense coming into the draft. What do you mean by tone setters, Kevin?
Well, I think, you know, necessarily every great defense that I've ever seen been around, you know, and you're looking at the Seahawks this year with the Cam Chancellors and the K.J. Wright, the linebacker, Bobby Wagner's, you know, the physical style, the San Francisco 49ers, you got the Justin Smiths, the Navarro Bowmans, you know, the Patrick Willis's, and then even with the Ravens back in the day, you know, Michael McQueary, remember that guy?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And Ray Lewis and Pittsburgh Steelers with, you know, even the outside linebackers with Jason Gilden and Joey Porter and even bring it back to Woodley and Harrison. These are the guys that are the physical, you know, maybe not the standout players that you always hear, but they're the guys that are going to set the tone. They're going to bring a physical element to the defense. And I believe they are the building blocks behind creating a strong foundation for a physical defensive style unit that, you know, usually goes, travels well. And you know, when they travel well, you perform well in the playoffs. So to me, I think the tone setters, the guys that are, you know, glass eaters, they call them, really stand out to me. And to me, I'd rather have a little bit of dip in athleticism to a guy that's more aggressive and physical style, especially in the front seven.
Do the tone setters always play on defense, Kevin, or can there be tone setters on offense as well?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I look at a guy like Jodon Duncan out of Dixie State, a late-round prospect. He's a walking episode of ER in terms of medical durability, but you know, you watch this guy on tape and, you know, he catches the football. He refuses to be tackled. He's just a throwback type player. The Owen Marcinek, I remember him out of Stanford a couple years ago. So, you know, you have the offensive linemen as well. But these are the guys, you know, usually on the defensive side of the ball, I really like to see the guys set the tone up front and bring that physical edge.
And you have compiled a list of what, about five tone setters in this year's draft?
Yeah, you know, I started with Scott Crichton out of Oregon State. You know, a little bit limited in terms of athleticism and flexibility as a defensive end, but at 275, he's got heavy hands. He's got shock in his hand, and he brings it. I mean, he's locked in sixth gear. His ability to convert speed to power. He's a guy that's going to set the edge for you and really give you a high motor off the edge there. Deion Buchanan out of Washington State, one of my favorite players. This guy will come up and knock your head in the next week, Murph. He is at 6'1", 211. I think he's in the Cam Chancellor, Bernard Pollard mold, kind of that sheriff roaming in the middle of the field. That receivers, you know, constantly keeping tabs on him, make you think twice about going over the middle of the field. And he brings more than just a strong safety type. He's got some playmaking instincts. He's got 15 career interceptions. C.J. Mosley out of Alabama, been the alpha dog for the Alabama defense the last 2 years. This guy's a playmaker at every position, at every phase of his game. To me, I think he's one of the top 10 pure football players in this class. You know, he's got some durability, shoulder, hip. That'll probably drop him a little bit in the first round, but if he can stay healthy, he's a guy I think is going to be one of the better players out of here. Jason Verrett, the cornerback of the TCU, and Taylor Hart kind of reminds me, the defense man out of Oregon, reminds me a little bit of Brett Kiesel from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Never going to be a guy that's going to be in the headlines, but I think he's going to piece together a very long, productive career.
Let me back you up a little bit. When you talked about Scott Crichton, you referred to him having heavy hands, shock in his hands. Tell us what you mean by that, please.
Well, you know, just the heavy hands you see with the punch. And when you're watching tape, and he's got that explosive upper body powder. So when a guy goes to punch somebody and you see an offensive lineman or a tight end's head kind of jolt back, his upper body jolt back, that's when you see that. That's what you like to see in these edge defenders. You like to see heavy hands, guys that can shock and kind of shed defenders, if you know what I mean, Murph.
Sure. You know, when I hear you talk about C.J. Mosley, I was thinking back, it wasn't that long ago, maybe three and a half months ago, Kevin, when around these parts, and I guess it predates the signing of Brandon Spikes, many people thought C.J. Mosley would be, you know, the Bills' first-round pick. Is he dropped to the point where you wouldn't even consider him in the top half of the first round now?
I don't know if he's dropped that far. I know some teams have some medical concerns on him. Some teams might be fine. You know, he might have been fine with the medical checks with every other team. So I don't know what Buffalo's situation was with him. To me, a healthy C.J. Mosley is well worth the pick at 9 as a value.
Interesting.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the top 10 pure football players. This guy played in Alabama defense, and he's been the leader. He's a guy that's gotten stronger at the point of attack, and he's a guy that does it in coverage. He does it blitzing. He does it in range against the run. He's a playmaker, Murph, and I think he's got one of the best, probably the best instincts of any linebacker in this class. You could argue Chris Borland of Wisconsin's up there with him, but to me, C.J. Mosley, big-time playmaker.
Well, you just mentioned a name I was going to ask you about. Is on your list of honorable mention tone setters, Chris Borland from Wisconsin. What a great record of production for him for the Badgers, and what a great attitude Chris Borland has. We got a chance to talk to him at the Senior Bowl a couple of months ago, and there's all these comparisons out there. Zach Thomas, maybe Chris Spielman.
Yep.
I mean, he's just a really good, solid football player, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, Murph, he lacks prototypical measurables.
Yep.
He's got short, under 6 feet. He's got, like, 29-inch arms. But you know what? When you turn on the tape, all he does is he's around the football and making plays. I mean, you throw on the Ohio State tape, you throw on the Penn State tape, this guy is an absolute animal. And both of those tapes, one of the more impressive tapes, I think, you know, 230-pound Carlos Hyde, he takes him on at the goal line, Murph, and stones him. I mean, they're one-on-one and stones him at the goal line. This guy loves to play the game. You can tell it by the energy that he shows. I'd get excited just watching him on tape.
Yeah.
I get a lot of energy, you know, and you love to see that from, especially from linebackers. So, to me, Chris Borland, I think he's a good value in that day two range, whether it's second or third round. I think he's going to make it, and I think he's going to be productive in the NFL, despite the lack of prototypical measurables.
We're on the line with Kevin Weidel, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, 8 days away until the draft. Your mention of Carlos Hyde takes me to our next topic, Kevin, the running backs. I don't think that it's a true need position for the Buffalo Bills, not early anyway, but they have had a succession of kind of bigger-sized running backs work through here at One Bills Drive for their official visits. What could the Bills look at, down the line, maybe third round on, as far as a big running back who might fit the bill for what they're looking for here in Buffalo?
You know, Jeremy Hill out of LSU kind of got some quick feet, nimble feet, runs with good power. He's learned to get more north-south and utilize his power more. He's a bigger back. Andre Williams out of BC, You know, I think he's a good number two, maybe number three back that can come in at 235 pounds. I had a chance to watch him at North Carolina live this year. He's got nimble feet. The problem is he's still developing as a blocker and doesn't provide much as a pass catcher. But you talk about a number two back that can come in, and he's got deceiving top-end speed. He's got long strides that remind me a lot of watching the back in the day, the highlights of Terrell Davis. You know, he's kind of galloping almost. Doesn't look like he's running fast, but he's pulling away from defenses. So he's a guy that's interesting right in that fourth round range. Terrence West out of Townsend, I know he's getting a ton of hype.
He is.
Me, I'm not buying into it that high. You know, people are talking second round. I think it's way too high. I think he's more of a fourth, fifth round type for me. But he's a bigger back that runs with balance behind his pad level. I just don't know how much juice he has. Storm Johnson, another back of Central Florida, very good open field runner. Has some versatility in the pass game. To me, has to work on his fumbling issues. And also has to work on getting more north-south as a runner. I don't know how tough he is inside the tackles as well, but he's a guy that really, you get him in the open field, and he's got some wild plays to you. And Lake Seastrunk, you know, 205, 210 pounds, not as big as the other backs I've talked about. But, you know, from a guy, just remember watching him coming into this year, he's got one of the more natural, I think, abilities as a runner with the ball in his hand. But another guy's had fumbling issues and doesn't provide much in the pass game. So, to me, if you're looking for a number two, number three type back, there's options, but they all kind of have some weaknesses.
Kevin, I got to ask you about one more running back, and it's David Flewellen out of Toledo. He's a local guy. That's why we asked about him. He comes from Lockport, just up the road here from Buffalo. When we saw him at the Senior Bowl, he was still recovering from a pretty serious ankle injury. I assume he's healthier now, but is he a draftable prospect? I know he's kind of down the line when you look at some of the running backs.
Yeah, you know, right now we have him as a fringe seventh, already free agent type back, 5'11", 225 pounds, you know, running the 4.7 range, so he's going to lack some juice. But he's a guy that, you know, you could bring in, you never know. And sometimes these 40 times will play with your mind, because if you dock a guy. I mean, Terrell Davis, who I just talked about, the Broncos, was in the 4.6s. But when you got him on the field and he got in the open field, he ran away from defenders. Now, Flewellen doesn't have that breakaway speed. He runs with good balance. I think he's got a little bit of lateral agility. He provides something in the passing game for you, some versatility. But to me, I just see him more as a later-round developmental type back.
We're on the line with Kevin Weidel. He is a draft analyst for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at KevinW_ESPN. On Twitter, I noticed that you were taking a look at some later-round quarterback prospects, including a guy from SMU, Garrett Gilbert. We know that name here in Buffalo. His dad, Gale, was the backup on the Super Bowl teams, the third quarterback, actually, behind Kelly and Reich on the Super Bowl teams here in Buffalo. Garrett Gilbert, what do you know about him?
Well, you watch him, Murphy's a big kid, and that's what the NFL is going to, you know, obviously the scouts are going to get to that. You know, 6'4", 221 pounds. You know, he filled in for Colt McCoy in the 2010 BCS Championship, didn't fare very well, 15 of 40, 186 yards, two touchdowns and four interceptions. And then he had some injuries, shoulder injury next year, 2011, had some maturity issues, lack of focus, and he transferred from Texas to SMU. But he's a big kid, he's got a strong arm, and he really can sit in that pocket and kind of absorb contact and make throws with defenders, you know, dangled on him. But to me, he's a long project. I mean, he's a big project. He needs work with his feet. I think he needs work as a decision maker and his overall accuracy. He leaves a lot to be desired. But you get a guy with that type of size and that type of arm, and automatically these coaches, scouts, especially the quarterback coaches, when they get into this process, think they can mold a guy like Gilbert. So, you know, he's garnered some attention late here, but to me, I still see him as a big project and as a later round pick at this point. Another guy that's really picked up some steam, Murph, two other guys I want to give you some. Keith Wenning out of Ball State and David Fales out of San Jose State. I've talked to a few coaches in the league, quarterback coaches that have worked them out privately. Really like these guys and how they've worked out. Are picking up a lot of steam right now. So they're two guys to keep an eye on as later, mid to late developmental type prospects. Wenning, I like his poise in the pocket. Does a great job of handling pressure, slotting around, and he's tough. He'll stare down the gun barrel. Fails, you know, playing a different system, more spread out this year. But if you go back to his 2012 tape, I think it shows a better projection of him as a prospect. You know, average arm strength, slightly above average arm strength. So he's going to have to play more in a West Coast system. But he's smart, and I think he's accurate, especially in a short to intermediate area.
Well, you brought up Wenning, the one MAC quarterback. We had a question the other day about another Mid-American Conference quarterback, Jordan Lynch, out of Northern Illinois. Do you have anything to tell us about him and his draft prospects, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, I just had a chance to watch him last night, finishing up a couple of these reports, these late guys that we haven't got done from the combine. You know, Lauren, look at Lynch. He's 6 foot, 217 pounds. I don't know if he's going to be able to make it in the NFL as a quarterback. And he's athletic. He's mobile. He's got a good enough arm, but he's got a three-quarters release. And he throws a lot off an uneven platform. He's got a funky release, and it's not always unbalanced, if you will, Murph. And he's going to have to do a better job, if he does, of learning to work the pocket because he lacks patience. He'll get from first to second degree to second progression, and then he'll look to run. Naturally, he's a runner. And then when he runs, he's got a running back mentality. Well, let me tell you something. Jordan Lynch better learn to have a quarterback mentality when he runs because he'll be knocked out of the league within a year if he does that. But I just don't see this guy projecting at the next level. To me, maybe a defensive safety or running back, he might have his best shot. And if he does go that way, he's going to have to be a heavy, heavy special teams contributor if he's got a chance to make the next level.
Hey, Kevin, we spent a little time today with Doug Whaley and with his personnel guy, Jim Monas, and we kind of know what they do in this final week before the draft. What do guys like you do in this final week before the draft? What's left after all the video you've looked at?
Oh, you know, the fun stuff, Murph. Editing reports, formatting reports, you know, to put in a book to get printed. You know, the fun part of the job.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts.
And we'll watch a couple late round guys that we couldn't get to, especially this year. We got our tape late, so right now we're just trying to clean up some guys in case they get drafted. We have some nuggets on them. We're familiarized with them. So right now, just cleaning up a couple late round guys and formatting reports and doing a lot of radio and internet videos right now, Murph. That's really about it. And I'll tell you what, I'm ready for this draft.
Yeah, we all are.
Way too drawn out, and I can't believe it's still here.
We all are.
Still a week away.
Kevin, your insight, tremendous. Thank you. I hope we get a chance to talk one more time before the draft next week. Thank you for being on with us tonight.
You got it, Murph. Anytime.
Kevin Weidel, NFL draft analyst. He's been our go-to guy all spring. You can follow him on Twitter at KevinWESPN. You can see his latest story, his latest post on ESPN.com, the top tone setters for the 2014 draft. And you can see him on ESPN as well and ESPN.com on video reports as we get ready for the NFL draft. Phone lines open when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Kevin Weidel's been great to us. Really solid guest. Glad we bumped into him. His brother Casey works here for the Bills in the video department, and he's a bona fide guy talking about the draft. He's a guy. Kevin Weidel, Jay Harris, he's a guy. He knows what he's talking about on the draft. Don't you agree? I mean, he's been a great guest for us. Always available. We've had him on almost a weekly basis now for the last couple of months. And you know, I took him deep down into the draft in that conversation tonight, and he knows, you know, he's down there to the 8th and 10th best quarterbacks in the draft he's talking
about.
And
what did he say when we went on? You know, right before we went on, we said, this is what you're going to throw at, or what we're going to throw at you, and he said, throw it at me. I'm ready to go.
He's good.
Wherever you need me to go.
Highly recommend as a Twitter follow, Kevin WESPN. Look for his work on ESPN. He's an up-and-comer. I think he's the next Todd McShay or Mayock or somebody like that. We thank him again. He's been a great guest. A couple of minutes left here in the show. We've been talking a lot about Johnny Manziel, and Dennis in Florida has been waiting patiently. Dennis, thank you. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot, John. A long-time listener, and I have to say it's really appreciate the show every night.
Thanks.
Hey, I have to say, when it comes to EJ Manuel, I think that they're kind of being a little over-stressful with him. I think he's being a rookie quarterback. I think he's got a lot of stress on him, a first-year offense and so forth and so on, and I feel like a lot of people are just ready to jump ship too easy.
I do,
yeah. I just feel like everyone talking about Johnny Manziel and Bridgewater and all these other quarterbacks, and I feel like we got the best one. I feel like we traded back last year, got the extra pick. I feel like we were going to wait for our quarterback. This year, I feel like we're going to go offense. Everyone feels offense. Everyone's talking offense. You know, I feel like it's going to be the best offensive player. I mean, I don't think we'll mortgage our future. I don't think that's the way Doug Whaley goes. I think he's a kind of play the seat of his pants kind of man. But I feel like he's still going to give us a lot of smoke screens this week.
All right.
When it comes to
And what his plans are. I agree with you, Dennis. Thanks. A couple of things. Doug Whaley's on the show with us tomorrow night at 7:30, and we'll kind of probe into his mindset. Tomorrow is 1 week away from the start of the draft. We'll talk with Doug Whaley about that tomorrow. And I agree with you. You know, it's not as if E.J. Manuel flamed out in his rookie year. He didn't. He only got 10 starts. He was hurt a couple of times. That held him back a little bit. He had some ups and downs. He's got a lot of room for improvement. But it's not like he flamed out and you got to get another quarterback this year. I just don't think that's the case. But everybody's got a different opinion on that. Speaking of opinions, on our website, BuffaloBills.com, you can take a look at some of the draft prospects who are out there. And we've got a regular series, Chris Brown and I, going back and forth on draft preview. And the video preview up right now is Teddy Bridgewater, the quarterback from Louisville. I think, I did that one. Teddy Bridgewater's up right now. Tomorrow, Chris Brown's feature on one of the other tight ends, Troy Nicholas of Notre Dame, will be up on the website. And more to come right up until the start of the draft. So go to BuffaloBills.com for our draft preview, sponsored by Time Warner Cable, and get a look and hear from some of the draft prospects. And as usual, I want to remind you about the Predict the Picks 2014 Draft Contest. It is sponsored by the Bills and M&T Bank. Go to BuffaloBills.com. The contest runs through next Wednesday. Your chance to predict who the Bills will select in the first round, and the person who gets it correctly gets an exclusive meet and greet with the Bills' first pick. All kinds of gifts from New Era Cap Company, their exclusive NFL draft cap as well. Go to BuffaloBills.com/predictthepicks to see more on that. All right, tomorrow night, as we said, Doug Whaley is going to join us to talk about the draft, a week away from his first draft as NFL general manager. So make sure you tune in for that. We're on the air live from 7 to 9, coming down the home stretch for the NFL draft. Again, I'm excited about it, but boy, we've talked about it a lot, especially in the last few weeks. Let's talk about it again tomorrow night. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO. Family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Mike Jafari, our engineer, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Tomorrow night, we're back on the air at 7. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.